And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. I'm Roy Morgan. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. The line or the number here at the station, it's a little bit different than what I've given you in the past, but this is the one that's clear. And this is the one that enables me to take phone calls where I can take questions and do my best to answer them. This program is Health Essentials. The phone number is 903-586-6592. All right, if nobody calls, actually, this article, it really does pique my interest, and I think it makes a good point in the bottom line. I mean, it doesn't tell you everything, but let me read this to you right here. Came across this article from, where did I get this from? Isn't that horrible? I already lost my resource. Okay, it comes from, the journal Steroids, 2017, May 21st. And what it does is it looks at several factors to find out what is it that causes a man to have low levels of testosterone. Of course, as I work through this, we could probably transfer this over that if a woman is tremendously underperforming in the ability of her glands to produce estrogen or progesterone or testosterone, doesn't it just kind of beg the question, well, why is that the case? So, just listen to this and I'll make it quick. Researchers at the Naval Health Research Center in San Diego, they measured testosterone levels of 57 men that were part of an elite unit. I'm kind of guessing Navy SEALs. They recorded the men's BMI, which is body mass index, sleep levels, stress levels, fatigue, and blood pressure. And one of the things they did also is they used questionnaires and they actually made manual physical measurements. So they showed that age was a really important predictor of testosterone levels. And of course, you know where this is coming from. When you're young, you produce the most testosterone. But as you age, everything starts going downhill as far as your ability to produce it. So they showed that between the age of 28 and 31, absolutely the highest levels of testosterone. Past 31, oh yeah, it drops like a brick. Now, they asked the question, does fatigue of the soldiers play a role in their testosterone? And so the higher the soldiers scored with their level of tiredness or fatigue, the lower their testosterone. Of course, you can't see the graph that I'm looking at. The same was true for stress. The more stress that men experienced, the lower their testosterone production. Now, I don't have the charts in front of me, but that's also very, very true for women. If a woman feels like her hormones are just out of balance, why don't we ask the questions? Is there tremendous fatigue? Is there exhaustion? What are we doing about stress? Actually, I have the chart right here. You can't see it, but it shows when they measure how much sleep a person's getting, when they look at the body mass index, when they look at the age, the two factors that show the strongest destruction of hormone production is going to be fatigue and stress, which means the more stress you have and the more fatigue, the lower the hormone production. Of course, the way that I want to look at this is, can you start to ask yourself the question, okay, my hormones are not what they should be, or my body's not producing hormones? Well, just ask yourself the question, how much continual ongoing stress am I under, and how worn out or exhausted am I? You know, even if a woman has her ovaries removed in the uterus, like in a total hysterectomy, well, God has designed two glands. They sit just atop of your kidneys. They're called the adrenal glands. And what do? They are the backup system for the ovaries. And so if they're strong, if they have vitality, well, guess what? They can make all the hormones that you need. It's very interesting, actually. So we'll go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Roy. Let me turn my radio off.
Thank you.
Yes.
You can't hear what I hear, but it's pretty bad. Anyway, go ahead.
I've got a little problem, not a big problem, but a little problem with this lady that I'm thinking very seriously of making a soulmate. We are both widows, or I think I'm a widower, but in any case, she came and had been having trouble with her gallbladder, and you worked with her, and then for breakfast time I eat 3 eggs every morning, and she had, I think, a preconceived notion that eggs messed with her cholesterol, so she didn't eat very many eggs.
Okay.
And I wanted you on the radio, because I think she's listening, to tell her how valuable that protein is. And I'm going to hang up and let you.
Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate the question.
Okay.
Okay. Use your imagination for just a moment. If we were to remove all the water from your body, because basically, if you're 70% water, you can kind of say, you know what? You're full of water today. You're 70% water. But if all the water were removed, what would be the exact main substance or building block that your body's made of? Well, that would be amino acids. So if you want to say, is that protein? Well, the answer is yes. And so I think I covered this maybe about 3 months ago, give or take. But they have shown that one of the greatest predictors of longevity is going to be protein. And when I say protein, I'm referring to what you consume. So that whether that be eggs or fish or chicken, beef, something that is an animal, it could be venison, elk, moose, all that's protein right there. And it comes in a perfect format. Now, put that thought on hold for 1 second. It might have been a month and a half ago that I covered a topic about infant mortality. And this study had just been published. They looked at over 170 countries, and all they did was they tried to find out which children lived to be the age of 5. And those that, very unfortunately, very sad, that children that die in their infancy or as a toddler or before they hit age 5. And they showed the more vegetables and starches they ate, the greater the death rate. They showed without a doubt that when kids ate meat, and specifically red meat that comes from a cow, that's one example, that they outlived everybody else. It was so impressive that the researchers made one of their notations at the end of the study. They said something along the lines of, I'm probably not going to get this perfectly, but I remember it. They said, there must be some additional factor that's found in red meat that we haven't been able to figure out, identify, or evaluate that contributes to this longevity, because they just couldn't understand how red meat could be so much better and different for longevity of children, but it was true. And so, if you don't eat meat that contains fat, then what happens over time is your gallbladder starts to become pretty sluggish. It becomes weaker. It doesn't work as efficiently. Just like, can you imagine if you never exercise your body? What if you tell yourself, you know what, I think I'm just going to sit in the chair. That way I can preserve my joints. I'm not going to wear them out. Well, the opposite's true. If you sit down too much, what happens? Your body begins to deteriorate and decay. And so all I'm saying is, if you avoid foods that contain cholesterol, this is actually probably helping your body make a lot more cholesterol than probably what it would do normally. And by the way, the number one substance that triggers your body or your liver to make cholesterol, it's going to be starch and sugar. And that's really it. And so the higher your blood sugar goes, the more insulin is produced, and insulin tells your liver, make us more cholesterol. Which I realize this is just about the most confusing topic of all time. You've got to have cholesterol to live. But for most people, if you continually avoid foods that contain fat, like eggs, you're kind of asking for your body to start to become more sluggish. Now, it's kind of hard to argue with a person that's well into their 90s because they have tremendous longevity and they're blessed. But still, as long as you're alive, we're trying to find out how can we help tweak and improve your body where it can function better. Now, I do want to say this. If the gallbladder is really, really inflamed and irritated, and somebody's having or has experienced what's called a gallbladder attack, well, that's one situation that I usually tell them not to eat eggs because eggs make the gallbladder contract. That's not bad, but if it's inflamed, it may add insult to injury just for a moment, but down the road, yes, you'll be able to eat eggs again one day. But eggs are usually associated with tremendous longevity and health. I know this is going to come across as weird because there are a lot of people that say that if you're a complete total vegan, that's the key to longevity. And those studies are so hard to find. It really is. I know that, you know, they've done some out of what's the name of the town in California? Begins with an L. What's it called? I can't remember. It'll come to me momentarily. It usually does. All right, if you would like to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line open, 903. This is a different phone number now, 903-586-6592. That way, if you want to call and ask a question, I'll pick up the phone line just as soon as you call. 903-586-6592. Okay, here's another study that I think is really interesting. Okay, this one I'm really intrigued by also. It just is so impressive. Well, we have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines first. Good morning. Welcome to the program. You're on Health Essentials.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're sure
welcome.
I have
a question. My son is a tennis pro. He's a regular patient of yours. And about 7 years ago, the number of years out at this point kind of elude me, but he had a bout with AFib when he was on the tennis courts.
Yeah.
And you probably know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm.
And I think he had been getting into some of these weight training programs where there were a lot of sugar substitutes involved. And you pretty much, I think, had diagnosed that probably was his reason for having such a problem at that time. And the thing is that it really scared him, like, to death. I mean, literally. I mean, so here's kind of what has happened with him emotionally. Like, he really will not exert himself. And I don't know if he tells you that, but, like, he's sort of like, if he exerts himself, like, he'll kind of go into, like, some type of relapse with, you know, with this type of thing. So maybe you can, you know, enlighten me.
Well, the last thing that he told me was he was able to lift weights and to do some sprinting, and he had no issues whatsoever. And he told me his confidence was building.
Okay, so there is, and yet I don't, maybe I just don't see that on a physical level. You know, his brother and sister kind of question that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What would you say is the number one issue you're concerned with?
Well, I see him gaining weight.
Well, his job is rather sedentary.
Well, that's true.
I mean, he's not exactly functioning as a tennis pro, maybe right this very second, but your son is absolutely one of the greatest human beings on the planet. Could you imagine if we had more people like your son? The world would be like a such a beautiful place for everybody.
I appreciate you saying that. He is a great guy.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. But no, the last information that he shared with me is he is putting everything to the test because he's trying to get recondition his body, and he's training it. But he said he's just started working out again, and he's able to work out without any side effects or issues. No negativity at all.
Okay.
So that's the latest information that I have.
Okay, wonderful. And that's, I guess I listen to your program every Saturday, probably for the last one. Ever since you've been on, quite honestly, which is, I know, over two decades.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I used to live in Jacksonville, so
yeah,
it was, but, I'm down in Houston area now, but, he's still obviously up there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you've got a great son. He's really fond of his dad. He tells me all the time how you're doing.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I really, I appreciate, all that you've done for him, so.
Well, you're sure welcome.
All right. Well, have a great day.
Yes. Thank you so much for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. If you want to join me on the air, 903-586-6592. If nobody calls, I'm going to dive into this article. It's a good one. Actually, I think it's a really, really, really good one, but we'll go to the phone lines instead. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir. I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about fasting. Is 3 days the longest you should fast, and drinking water?
For the first time?
No, I mean just fasting, just in general. I'm just trying to get some more information.
Okay. Tell me exactly what you want to accomplish, and I'll do my best to kind of flesh out the question or give you a better answer.
I get my blood sugar lower.
Okay. Let me give you two or three ideas. Number one, there was a study done from the University of Toronto. And the question was, is there a cure for diabetes? And so you can see why that kind of piqued my interest, because I thought to myself, I don't ever hear commercials on television where they talk about this drug for diabetes cures diabetes. I've never heard that at all. So when I read the article, here's what happened. They took men that had diabetes for a minimum of 20 years. All of them were taking blood pressure medication. I think they were taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. That's kind of like a different topic, but that's the reality of it. They were taking an average of 3 different medications, and even some were taking supplemental injections of insulin just to regulate their blood sugar. Are you with me so far?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so what they did was they wanted to find out, is there a way where they could completely get the blood sugar to normalize? And at the same time, they wanted to see if this regimen would completely get them off all the drugs they were taking, meaning the body became healed, it no longer required the drugs, and so the diabetes just completely disappeared. So did the blood pressure. And here's what they did. And I'm just going to kind of make up some numbers. We can change this around any way you like, but this is just the way that I tell the story. On Monday and Wednesday and Friday, these men skipped breakfast. All they did was eat lunch and supper. And so that's 2 meals a day. And I think both the meals were within about a 6-hour window. So, for example, if they had lunch at 12 o'clock noon, they would have their supper at 6 p.m. So what they're doing is they're basically fasting for 18 hours a day. Does that make sense? Number next, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, what these men did was they just ate supper. And so from Monday at 6 o'clock till 6 o'clock the next day, they fasted exactly 24 hours. The very first man in the study, he was off all diabetes medication. His blood sugar was normal in 5 days by doing this. It took his body 5 days to adapt, whereas he had been on all these drugs for 20 years. The second man, it took him exactly 13 days until he completely had no need for any diabetes medication. I think the third man took 17 days exactly. He may have had diabetes for 30 years, though, which I'm not trying to make an excuse, but all these men got off all their medication, but what they did was, instead of fasting for 3 days straight, they basically, on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, they just ate one meal a day. That was supper. And so what happens is when you fast for 24 hours, you're causing your blood sugar levels to come down lower and lower, and you're trying to get your insulin to go lower and lower. Now, in this study, I don't really think the men really exercised very much. And I just wonder what would happen if they did. It'd probably be even much greater. At 5 weeks, they lost an average of almost 23 pounds. So,
okay, so I eat one meal a day, and it's a large meal. I'll have like peanuts maybe for a snack before bed or something, but
okay.
I'm already doing that, but I was just wondering.
Well, tell me what your blood sugar levels are.
It's like 250.
250.
And I am skinny. I'm like 5'10", 160.
Okay, gotcha. Well, there you got a glitch in your hardware. I don't know how else to say that. So even if you're doing that, do you go for long walks every day?
About a mile.
That's not a long walk. Do you go for, do you do any exercises? Like, do you go to the gym? Do you try to get your muscles stronger?
No.
Okay, have you been to a doctor?
No.
Okay. You might want to, because if it's 250, you've got some other issue that probably needs to be evaluated. They can easily test you to see if you have type 1 diabetes.
What is that?
Type 1 diabetes is where the pancreas fails to make insulin to lower your blood sugar. Type 2 by diabetes is called insulin resistance. At the very least, that's one thing that you have. It doesn't sound like you have type 1 diabetes, but if you're eating one meal a day, I would probably question, what are you eating? And so, for example, what would happen to your blood sugar if all you did was have a steak for supper? You could put it to the test and find out.
I'm just doing vegetables.
Well, those are all starches, and starches convert into sugar. And so that's going to be pretty tough to lower your blood sugar if you're just eating starches.
I thought you were supposed to eat vegetables, not fruits.
Well, I didn't mention fruits at all. I was talking about eating meat.
Okay.
And so if you focused on eating meat that's high in fat, that lowers your blood sugar and your insulin pretty substantially right there.
So like steaks and eggs?
Yeah, that's one idea. Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, give me an example of what your last meal for the day is. It's a big meal. What is it?
Mixed roasted vegetables like broccoli, carrots, cabbage.
You just put them in the oven?
Usually fry them in a pan with a little bit of olive oil.
Okay. Kind of like a stir fry.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, those don't sound bad at all.
Starch?
Those probably wouldn't have a lot of starch. Do you eat rice or bread or grains or corn?
Nope.
Okay. Well, there's some glitch, and it may be that if I were guessing, you probably have a fatty liver. I'm not saying that as a slam toward you, but when the liver is full of fat, it's really hard to get your hormones in your body to rejuvenate.
Does that mean I shouldn't eat fat?
No, sir, that's not what that means at all. That just means you're probably over-consuming carbohydrates, and your body's got to do something with them. And so, for example, if your blood sugar stays at 250 when you measure it, your body's got to do something with the sugar, so what it's doing is converting it into fat, and your body will deposit it in the liver, thus creating what's called a fatty liver. Even if a person is really trim, slender, skinny, they can still have a fatty liver. Have you had a triglyceride level measured at all?
Is that the A1C thing?
No, A1C is going to tell you what your blood sugar average is over 3 months, and I think that'd be a good test to have done.
It's like 14.
What now?
It's like a 14.
Well, that means your blood sugar is way, way above 250 on average. You may have type 1 diabetes. I don't know. I think you should go to the doctor and get it checked out.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good day. All right. If you want to join me on the radio, 903-586-6592. I mean, there's always a point where when you try to do something and it's not working, that means there's something that's we need to check out. And so your doctor can easily do a hemoglobin A1C. They can test you to see if you really have a problem with insulin. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Roy.
How are you today?
I'm doing good. Been up, just walked 1.5 miles, 20 minutes, getting back into a lot of exercise. It's a beautiful day out there.
You ain't kidding. It's gorgeous outside. I love it.
I'm calling about my wife. She's listening in the other room. This has nothing to do with it, but this last weekend she ended up with 102 fever. So we ended up in the ER and ended up in the hospital for a couple days. Ended up just being a virus going around, I think. But while we were in there, we noticed that her blood pressure was high, like 170 over 90, which isn't crazy high, but it's not good. And the last day we were there, they were getting ready to put her, had a pill for her, and I said, what's that? And it was a beta blocker, and I said, let's wait mm-hmm. on that. So we did. And our plan is to come see you this week. And then last night she, so I've got two questions, the blood pressure, and then last night she called me as I'm a nurse at one of the hospitals, and I was getting ready to get off. And yesterday, all of a sudden, she started seeing black spots in her left eye and had some vision changes. So again, we visited the ER again, and they're going to get us to see an ophthalmologist, but they think it's like some vitreous portion breaking off or mm-hmm. something in her eye. So those are two things that I'm concerned about. We're going to see an ophthalmologist sometime next week.
Did they say she, did they identify what type of viral infection she had?
They did not. They ruled out COVID. They ruled out flu 1 and 2. They thought she had no infection. They CT'd her whole body. They CT'd her abdomen.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And then they CT'd her chest. And then last night they CT'd her head. So I was like, Jesus, keep her, all this radiation going through her. But
oh, my goodness, that's like a lot of studies, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I didn't know what was going on with her. They found a diverticulum on the fundus of her stomach, 5 centimeter, but he said the WBCs weren't raised, and he wasn't concerned about that.
Did you actually see the blood test to see if that was accurate or not?
Yeah, when we came in, the WBCs were 12.
Well, that's high. That's real high.
Yeah, well, but then the next day they were 7. And when we left, they were like 7.
Well, there's other markers on there besides that one that might point toward additional information.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we're going to come in and see you, and I'll bring all her lab work.
Okay.
So right now I'm just, you know, with the BP, with the blood pressure, and this eye thing's kind of concerning. The doctor didn't think it was, you know, gave us if you have retinal detachment, come back in and see us.
Well, she didn't see bright lights, did she? Like a big flash of light?
No flashing.
Okay.
Just a little vision change and these dots came up.
Well, and that, you know, that's always possible. That could just be a side effect from some of the medications they gave her once she entered the emergency room or the hospital.
Well, I think they had her Ancef is all they gave her. Or Zosyn. Zosyn IV piggyback. A couple, 3 or 4 doses.
Was that for nausea? Did you say Zofran?
No, Zosyn.
Zosyn.
They gave her some. They gave her some Zofran, but an antibiotic. They gave her 3 or 4.
Well,
doses.
How do we know this is not just a? I mean, I can tell you just right up front, the worst reactions I ever see to any drug are always antibiotics.
Okay.
If I want somebody to tell me they've had a catastrophic event, I always say, "What antibiotic did you take?" And they go, "How'd you know?" Well, it's just they're highly allergenic. They really are. The most near-death experiences that I've ever witnessed are among people that have taken a antibiotic.
Okay.
I'm not saying antibiotics are bad. They're very useful. They save lives, obviously. Yeah. They can cure double pneumonia. But I've seen people have such horrific. And so would you say it's true that before she had the black specks in her eye and she had the visual problem, that she took an antibiotic prior to that?
Day before.
Yeah, well, that still qualifies as she took it before, so I'm just talking cause and effect.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's just something I would consider. And so whatever antibiotic they gave her, I would do a literature search to see if that's happened among many people. I mean, this is all very easy to do. Do you remember the name of the antibiotic?
Zosyn.
How do you spell it?
Zosyn.
Zosyn. What I'll do is, after I leave the program today, I will go and I'll look it up and I'll just see what I can come up with.
Okay. She also, with her early eye exam, she had the beginnings of macro degeneration in her
eyes. Yes, macular.
So we've been on the all red vitamins because she's been taking that religiously, and there's been tests that shows.
How old is your wife?
I should say, honey, can I tell her? 70.
Well, you're not supposed to yell it out over the radio. Okay. So what we want to do is we want to figure out what's out of balance. In the meantime, why can't you just give her like a little bit of baking soda every day? You could take a half a teaspoon of baking soda, add it to water, stir it up, and see if that has a soothing effect on her body.
Okay.
She could start drinking hibiscus tea right now, 2 to 3 cups a day.
Okay.
Maybe one of the things, just given what she's been through, I'm like a huge fan of the healing benefits of grape or grape juice. And so if you went to the grocery store in the frozen food section, they have Concord grape concentrate, and you could just dump the whole canister in about half a gallon to a gallon of water, or 2/3 of a gallon, stir it up with a little bit of salt, maybe a teaspoon of salt, and a juice of a couple lemons, and start letting her sip on that. Of course, you should serve it to her with a smile on your face, carrying it on a platter. And if she, that's something to help balance her blood, and to help, she's probably, did she ever get dehydrated with a fever?
Oh, yeah, she did.
Okay,
she
so that's another factor right there. And you always see the greatest eye problems with dehydration.
Okay.
And so I know this is not going to make logical sense, but can I suggest that the brain is the organ that uses absolutely the most energy in all the human body? Okay, you can buy into that, right?
I agree.
Do you know what number two is? It's the eyes. It's incredible how much energy. And would you believe me if I said that 70% of your brain is just devoted to that one amazing sense, the sense of vision?
And so, wonderfully made.
Well said. Thank you for saying that. And so the very first organ system that becomes adversely affected with dehydration is always the brain first. It's the very last one to come back online. And so these visual issues, it may be more of a dehydration and reaction to the antibiotic.
Okay.
I know they're not going to tell you those things, but I'm always going to tell you the truth. So yeah, I'll look up the Zosyn, and I'll see if it has any correlation to visual problems upon taking it. I mean, I know this is horrible what I'm fixing to tell you, but I think it was last Saturday morning, I just heard the radio report that a 7-year-old boy died instantly, almost, after taking the COVID vaccine. Well, what am I supposed to make about that? Number one, it just makes me sick on some deep emotional level that a child died.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all. But when I heard that on the news, I thought, okay, you know, this is bad. But, you know, people have reactions to drugs, so I just want you to be open. And I'll look it up.
That's fine. And then with her blood pressure, we're off all sugar, we're off diet.
Good.
We're off sugar since February. No dairy. Dairy gives me a cluster headache. And
oh, my goodness. Well, that'd be enough motivation for me to steer clear of it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish a cluster on anybody.
Yeah. They're the pit.
That is the worst headache of all time.
Yeah. But what can we... Because if my first thought was, oh, crap. Or, oh, crud, excuse me.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
I left her blood pressure high. That's the first thing I said, are you stroking? Of course, I asked her all the stroke questions. They came back negative, and I was happy with that.
Yeah.
But you know, I want to naturally get her blood pressure under control as well.
Well, that's why I mentioned the baking soda, and that's why I talked about hibiscus. I just didn't say it.
Okay.
And if she's not taking magnesium, you need to get her some magnesium.
We have magnesium cream.
Good. We'll give her plenty of
I'll make her start doing it
again. Yeah, just start taking magnesium throughout the day. What's the worst thing that could happen? She might have to go to the bathroom an extra time or two.
Yeah.
Hopefully that won't be too bad. And so let's start trying to relax her body. You could always give her some hawthorn.
Hawthorn. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that I like very much, you've probably heard me say that lemons are one of the most amazing remedies of all time. I have a story from this week. I'm going to make it real quick because I thought it was funny. A husband was telling me, he's probably 75, he was telling me, this is after he wrecked his plane, by the way, just joking, but he was telling me that his wife developed this horrible, horrible neck pain. And he told her, he said, hey, why don't you do what Dr. Morgan says and rub some lemon juice on it. And she goes, you know, I don't want to do that. It's too sticky. That doesn't sound like fun. And it went on for a few days. And she said, okay, I'm ready. Let's put some lemon juice on it. And he said, the pain, the next day she woke up with no pain. But lemon juice is God's creation. It's like you said, fearfully and wonderfully made. But lemon juice is one of the greatest cleansers of the body and a universal solvent. So if you could squeeze some fresh lemon in her tea, that does help clean her blood a little bit. And if there's any debris somewhere that doesn't belong, we're trying to clean it up with lemon.
Absolutely.
So you can't do any harm by doing that.
No. That's good. Okay.
And there's one herb that's called ashwagandha. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. I had some, but got old and I threw it away.
But ashwagandha, sometimes it's very, and you know what a beta blocker does? It blocks adrenaline. That's all it does.
Right.
That means her body's just pretty stressed, which for a variety of reasons. But ashwagandha, there have been times that I've seen people that blood pressure wouldn't budge, and that would do it because it helps greatly reduce the stress in the body, which is a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I hope all these things help a lot.
Yeah, we'll get right on it. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for your phone call, sir. Give my best to your wife.
I will.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, there's a phone line once again open. It's 903-586-6592. 6592. I realize that's different than the usual one. I'm probably going overboard, but thank goodness the radio station has another line that's crystal clear. Okay, I have this article right here, and, have another phone call. People are more important than articles, right? Alrighty. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a friend who has UTIs, and she's had them, she's in her 90s, and she has had them for several months, and I would I would like to know what to do to help her. She's in Virginia and is not able to hear you at all.
Okay. No, gotcha. I'm glad to help. Can I just go through my criteria?
Yes.
Okay. Usually if a woman is 90 and she's got UTIs and they won't go away, then usually what I'll do is I'll recommend several ideas. And I don't know if these are going to be in order, but I don't think that matters. You can just write them down. There's a type of oil that's called coconut oil. And when you look at coconut oil, when it's below 78 degrees, it looks like white lard. Do you know what I mean?
I have some.
Okay, then you know what I mean. And so what she does is she takes a little bit of coconut oil, and she needs to rub it into the skin right over where the bladder is located. Mm-hmm. I know this is not going to make logical sense. You're going, well, what is that going to do? Well, coconut oil contains lauric acid, and lauric acid has been shown to inhibit the growth of bacteria in the bladder. And so this is like a very old school remedy. It's cheap. So she can start up. So what she would do is she would apply the coconut oil to the skin over the bladder, and just gently apply it to the female reproductive area, and it will kind of wick up like a, you know, the wick of a oil lamp, so it can burn. So the coconut oil, she could apply that several times a day and see if that helps. Number two, I'm changing the topic slightly.
Okay.
There is a product that they sell at almost every department slash grocery store called Azo, A-Z-O.
Yes.
Based on cranberries.
Yes.
She's probably got a cranberry bog in her backyard, doesn't she? But she could.
Well, she does drink a lot of cranberry juice. That's true.
Well, the cranberry juice that she's drinking, it might have a lot of sugar added to it. Maybe. Just maybe. Because normal cranberry juice is like so tart. But Azo is really a good product. I've seen it work over and over again. The next thing is, I try to convince a person to eat things like a meal of only steak as one example. That may sound kind of weird, and for 90 years of age, I don't even know if she has all her teeth intact or if that would be hard. She doesn't?
Oh, my
gosh. Well, or if there is a different...
Awesome. Yeah, she's an awesome lady. She's got everything.
Does she really?
Yes, she does.
You mean she's got it all together, huh? That's great.
She's got it all together. She travels, and she's just, you'd never know she was 90.
Oh, that's amazing. I'd love to meet her.
Well, maybe one day you will.
Maybe one day. So what she should do is eat a steak, put all the butter she wants on it, season it with salt and pepper, and only eat that for a meal. And see if that gives her enough strength for her body to rise to the occasion and overcome. But the number one predictor of all time of infections that won't go away, that's going to be sugar in the diet. So okay. I don't know if the doctors told her, do not consume anything that's sweet, don't consume sugar. So almost like kind of a carnivore diet for a few days, that may help. Now let me go on to number four. There is a seasoning that I think is spectacular. It's called garlic. Garlic is literally one of the best drainage remedies for a female genitourinary tract or the urinary system. Mm-hmm. So garlic helps clean it out.
Hmm. All right.
Now, if it were me, I'd probably put one drop of pure oregano oil in a glass of water and drink it, just one drop, and see if that's enough to help clear the bladder of the infection. But these are all things that she can try. So cut out the sugar, garlic. Oh, my goodness. She might want to chew up a clove of garlic raw.
Oh, gosh.
What could go wrong there?
When I'm not there.
See, you're only thinking of your own self now.
I know.
But I am going to give you an A+ since you're calling on her behalf. That means you really do love her.
I do.
From a distance.
I do. The other thing, just an FYI, I brought a friend of mine to see you a couple of years ago that has lupus. And she called me yesterday, and they have told her she is going to lose her vision. So I am very sad about that.
Do you think that she did the things that I told her to do?
I think she tried.
What does that mean?
Well, she's in Virginia and I'm here, so I don't know. But I know that she has tried doing the things that you had said to her when we came to visit.
I'm pretty sure I told her to lay off wheat. Is that right?
I don't remember. I know the sugar was one of them.
Well, and that's all I'm asking is if a person comes to terms with when your immune system is attacking you, you've got to do everything that you can to help yourself to heal. And that means you've got to control what you can control, and that's going to be eating sugar and junk food.
Mm-hmm. I know that she drinks a lot of Pepsi. And that's got
well,
sugar in.
And you know what? I do remember that now. And there's just nothing that Pepsi has that's going to help heal your body. I know you know that. I'm not trying to preach to you.
Yeah. No.
But, you know, everybody makes a choice. And so, I mean, I see people all the time that I just can't convince them to give up Pepsi. I can't. Mm-hmm. Nothing I can do.
Yeah. Well, it's
what?
Sugar's addictive. It's addictive because sugar is addictive, you know?
You know, they had the study that just came out that said that pregnant women that drink diet soft drinks like Diet Pepsi, they have the highest occurrence of children with Alzheimer's that are born with, I mean, with autism is what I meant to say.
Really?
Yeah, and so you would think, we have these studies that show that drinking diet soft drinks has the highest correlation to older Americans developing Alzheimer's, dementia, cognitive decline. And now we have a study showing that if you're pregnant with a baby growing in your womb and you're drinking Diet Pepsi, you're going to have a child with autism. You would think they would remove it from the market.
Okay, what about Pepsis that aren't diet?
They're about the most, it's basically death in a can.
Okay.
I mean, there's what happens is every time you drink a Pepsi, it's so high in phosphoric acid, it's literally just beating the crap out of your blood and your kidneys. The kidneys suffer horribly. And you lose so much of your nutrients that you need to prevent inflammation. One of them, off the top of my head, is magnesium. And so every time somebody has, like, lupus, my job is to get them quiet. But if you're drinking Pepsis, it's going to be hard to reverse any disease while you're drinking soft drinks. I wanted to be more radical and say, hey, why don't you make some homemade lemonade with just lemon in your water?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's always a person's choice, always.
I know. I was just calling to try to at least help my friend with the...
You're such a good girl. No, thanks for helping her. I do remember this about the lady with lupus, though. I remember she had just a horrific amount of stress from her childhood up until... And it was just so horrific. I felt so bad for her. Not everybody has the same childhood, and hers was really rough.
It was rough, and it was interesting because she said to me later, she said, you know, I wanted to cry when I was there, and she said I didn't want him to see me crying because we had just talked about those things that had happened.
Probably on your way from Tyler to my office, you talked about those things, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Well, I think it's good. You're such a good friend to her. Keep up the good work.
Well, God's good.
God is really good.
Yeah, he's good. Listen, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Normally, I don't get up this early in the morning, but this was important.
You don't get up at 15 till 8?
No, I was up before 7, and I just couldn't get through.
Well, thank you for your phone call. I'm glad you're up.
All right,
have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That's always hard, but you know, it's always a person's... What was the story that I heard recently? Oh, yeah, there was an individual that was saying that if you don't get the COVID vaccine, you're going to die. And I'm going, no, that's just... And, but anyway, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I wanted to hear part of that article that you were sharing in regards, how do you increase, the best way to naturally increase testosterone?
Well, that article that I read made a really good point. It said the more physically and mentally exhausted that a person was, the lower their testosterone. And so you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip that around and say, oh, does that mean what they're really saying is, the better you nourish your soul and your spirit and your body, the better the testosterone, which the answer is always yes. And so
right.
I kind of was doing a play on words right there, but they were showing that if you want to have the best hormone production, you've got to manage stress and your energy levels, which technically, the more energy that you produce, the better your health is. Does that sound reasonable?
It sounds completely reasonable.
And I'm only
ever suggested I've used and it all works. So I just wanted to say one other thing.
Yeah.
Is there a way to be able to reduce CPAP so I don't have to use a CPAP?
Yeah, let me run this idea past you. How do you do any type of consistent exercise regimen? What I mean is you're trying to improve the function of your body, you're trying to stretch your diaphragm, you're building muscle.
Not consistent. I do work hard, but I don't have a consistent exercise routine.
Well, I totally believe you on that. I mean, shucking corn is hard work. I'm joking. No, but you used to, didn't you?
Oh, maybe. Go ahead.
Anyway, what I was going to say is there's one study where they had men for 14 weeks get on what's called an elliptical trainer.
Oh, yeah.
And for some reason, I'm thinking the number 42 minutes. I think they committed to 42 minutes a day. And at the end of 14 weeks, 100% of all the men were off their CPAPs.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is great.
Yeah, well, no, good. I'm glad. Thanks for responding that way. So that means if a person goes for a walk for 1 mile at one time, that's probably not going to really radically turn it around, just that one-time event.
Right. No, you know, I appreciate, I've got an elliptical machine. I just need to get on at 42 or 43 minutes or more.
We might need to lube it up. It doesn't have any dust on it, does it?
Well, maybe. But next question, how do I'm... Even though I didn't really work when it was 106 degrees,
nobody can.
But just lately, I was working. It seems as though I'm having heat related issues to the point that I can't see very well. I'm wanting to fall down. And what do I need to do? I'm trying to hydrate as best as possible.
Sir. Well, I need you to understand one point. Your cardiovascular system, if I say that's the heart
and
its totality and all the arteries and all the veins, that's your air conditioning system for the body.
Okay.
And so if you go out in 106 and say, you know what, it's hot, but I'm comfortable, not that big of a deal, that means your heart's in great working order. And so if the heat is becoming intolerable, the two things I look at is the circulatory system, but the next one I look at is called the hypothalamus. And that's the master control gland just right there at the center in the base of the brain. It's part of the limbic system. But what it does is it regulates your body temperature. So, like, for example, if a woman says, I'm having horrible hot flashes, they're intolerable, that's almost always a hypothalamus. Kind of like I saw a young lady the other day, well, when I say young, younger than me, horrible hot flashes. The second I give her hypothalamus extract, hot flashes go away.
Wow.
And that was impressive. I mean, I like stuff that works easy sometimes.
Right.
I only wish easy cases would come to me, because that way I really wouldn't have to be, reading so much and studying. I could just, like, slack off. I'm joking.
I know.
But no, and we do need challenges. We need the things put in front of us that we have to kind of work on and solve and pray to God about, right?
You know what? Absolutely. That makes us stronger.
Okay. Yes, you're right. And so, good point. I always like talking to you because you can always read through all my lingo talk and you always figure out what I'm talking about. So the hypothalamus is one system that I would look at, because if that starts working better, it may be that you become very tolerant to the heat and it's not hard on you.
Okay.
So that's one system right there. And if you did, just through faith or by faith, get on the elliptical and just say, you know what, I'm just going to commit to doing it for 5 minutes twice a day or 10 minutes once a day.
I thought you said 42 minutes a day.
But I'm trying to give you a start where it doesn't seem like so overwhelming. But, yeah, if you build up to 42 minutes every day.
Uh-huh.
Now, by the way, in that study that I told you about, they probably had 15 men drop out of the study. And they said, nope, we ain't doing it. And that's their choice, right?
Right.
But the ones that completed the study, I think there were 28 men, 100% of them were able to completely get off the CPAP.
Wow.
Because what they did was they greatly improved the tone of their lungs and their breathing airways. That doesn't even sound right. But everything related to breathing and your lungs and your diaphragm and your muscle tone, it all improved to where the body was able to do its job properly without requiring a mechanical device to help you assist breathing. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. I know that, look, I can go, I don't need to start small. I know I can do 30 minutes without a problem. I was just not doing it 42, and I wasn't being consistent, doctor, so.
No, and you're on the right track. If you can do 30 minutes right now, why don't you just hit 30 minutes and see what happens?
Sure.
Do you have any problem with an ankle or a foot or a knee or a hip?
I do.
Well, then give your body a chance to adapt. You know what? You may go to YouTube and just type in ankle mobility exercises.
Well, actually, it's it's arthritis and a broken foot that caused my ankle to be that problem. The other day, I put some cod liver oil onto it.
Yeah.
I don't have any problems. I think I heard that from someone that lived in Jacksonville.
What is it? Did your dad run over it in the tractor while he was harvesting corn?
No, I dropped a canoe, the front of a canoe on it when I was in the Boundary Water canoe.
Did you
area.
Say a canoe or a guillotine? About the same thing, huh?
Well, it was anyway, I thought it was just a bruise. Well, come to find out years later when I broke it again,
broken
it and I never fixed it the first time. So
it's like dropping an axe on your ankle.
Oh, it was horrible. Nonetheless,
oh my goodness.
No, not as good. And honestly, prayer works in regards to that too. I used to have intolerable pain with it, but you've helped me in so many ways. I can't thank you enough. I thank God.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Your program, your knowledge, your wisdom. Thank you so much.
You're the kindest man of all time. I just love when you call in. I really do. I leave the world's a better place because of you. Thank you very much for your kindness.
Well, thank you, sir. God bless you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy. I love people like that. When they walk away from a person, you think, oh, my goodness, they have just lifted me up. They've encouraged me. I can do it now. And isn't that true? Don't we all need people to encourage us and lift us up? And I know there's some people that won't have any part of that. They're going to focus on the other, but that's not what God wants us to do. He wants us to be about lifting people up. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Last week you'd mentioned a supplement, calcium something borate for helping the knees.
Yeah, calcium.
And I didn't
fructoborate.
Fructo? How do you spell the center?
I think the fructo part is F-R-U-C-T-O. Fructo.
Okay. Now, is that to help a knee that's not in bad shape, or does it help a knee that doesn't have any cushion?
No. This has got to be the best situation of all time. I want a knee that's maybe starting to act up a little bit. That would be my preference, instead of one that's past the point of no return. But they used it specifically for people that had bad knee pain.
Because I've got knees that are bone on bone. It's sort of waiting for the right time to get a new one.
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, because that was a brand new article for me, and I'll freely admit I don't have a lot of experience at all with that supplement. I've seen people use it and get good results, but it's not like I've seen 100 cases of it. But when I read the article, it worked really, really fast to reduce knee pain.
Okay.
So calcium fructoborate.
And that would be available at places like the Granary
and if it's not, you could always go online and type in which brands sell it. And I want to say the dose was around it's either 210 milligrams or 220 milligrams of the calcium fructoborate.
Okay.
I'm almost positive on that. I could look it up though pretty easy.
No, that'd be fine. No, I'll probably go online and see who offers it, and maybe it'll be locally or just buy it online.
And you know what? Maybe it'll be mixed with a blend of something like glucosamine sulfate or chondroitin or MSM. All those things are really good for the knees, too.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking the other three, so I thought maybe something adding to it.
Well, let me give you one little bit tidbit here. If it were me, and you're not going to like this, but I'm telling you what I would do. I would rub fresh lemon juice on the most painful part of the knees, and then olive oil once the lemon juice soaks in. And then I would go to YouTube and I would type in knee mobility exercises.
Okay.
And I would be faithful doing those and see if you start to gain some progress that amazes you.
Okay.
Because that's always what I've got to do when the knees aren't cooperating, is you've got to just work all that tightness out.
All right,
just consider
thank you very
it.
Much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for your phone call, buddy.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. What a nice man. Yes, obviously, anytime you realize the human body is a high-maintenance vehicle, you're so much better off getting ahead of the curve and doing something to get it back in good working order before it breaks down. I know that makes sense. Well, I've really enjoyed being with you today, and I hope I've helped somebody. May the Lord bless you and keep you, and may His face shine upon you. Lord willing, I will be back this time next week.